107.2 FM.
Radio Reverb. This is the Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM, available to listen to on DAB and as a podcast. And this is the August show this month. I'm taking the driving seat, as always, and joined by my lovely co-host, Lisa Moore. Hello, Lisa.
Hey, Helen. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
Really good, thank you. Yeah, really good.
This episode is all about events. And we're going to be speaking to a brilliant events organizer, Jake from Pub in the Park, in just a little bit. But before we do that, I wanted to open up this conversation because if we think about events, for the past 2 years, they haven't been able to happen. And both Lisa and I'm going to explore that with you in a moment, Lisa, have been people that have hosted our own events within the Brighton area that have been in person. And I think now that we're coming out of this period where, and I, you know, we were confined to our homes and we weren't able to go to restaurants and we weren't able to go to in-person events. And for me, it's actually taken a little bit of time to switch my brain back on to getting back out there and connecting with people. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. And interestingly, I was at a Toastmasters meeting last night and it was the first time where we had 5 or 6 visitors that came along. So it felt like it was a proper meeting again because there were lots of people in the room. There was energy, there was laughter, there was fun. But it's taken a long time to get back to that.
Did that feel good though?
It felt amazing. And it's funny, we have a little WhatsApp group and the core members that have stayed with it throughout this last couple of years were all saying how fantastic it felt like we were back to how we used to be. And, you know, it was serving the purpose it was there to do in the first place. So it was.
Yeah, because it's funny that I feel like, you know, in that forced confinement of not being able to go anywhere, it's taken so long for me to be, oh gosh, you know, this is all available again now. I should be doing this now, because it really is so important for mental health, for fulfillment, for nourishment, for learning and growth when you are in a room or a space with other human beings, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
No matter what that is.
But the virtual and online world that we've got used to is fantastic. It's been brilliant, and I see it will grow and it will grow. But there's nothing like human connection. There's nothing like seeing somebody face to face, whatever you're doing. That's what, you know, humans are pack animals. You know, we are supposed to be together. We're not supposed to be confined on our own, quiet.
No, and it really does fuel our neurons and our new pathways and our elasticity in our brain to be in front of each other. And this is so funny that we're actually talking about this now, because I think in the last few months, I've become much more conscious about being proactive in getting out of the house. So I joined the gym to do that. And then I joined the local Harbour Club down the road, and lots of families go there, which is really lovely. And I've booked to go to all these musical events that I've been going to over the past few weeks, and consciously spending time in front of people, meeting them for coffees, going for walks. And we're actually going to something today, aren't we?
We are. We talked about it on the show last month, didn't we? The Brighton Chamber networking. And it's funny, I was very conscious of the fact that I'd been very much insular last year and decided to, you know, start going out on walking, because I love walking. I've got a dog and I love walking, being outside. And I've got 2 fantastic groups now of people that I've met through walking, and we've been away on holiday. And it's just been wonderful to meet different people, different viewpoints, different ages, and connect and walk and be out there.
Well, is that through a particular organisation or?
Interestingly, it's been through Facebook groups.
Ah, okay.
You know, there are so many different groups, and I found one, I think it was called Outdoor Mates and Dates. I wasn't particularly looking for the dates thing, but I was looking for mates. So that was through one. And then through that, I went on a walk organised by a guy who, funnily enough, only lives down the road from me. But he'd already got another group. So I've sort of got these two separate groups of people. And it's just been amazing. And the first walk I went on, it's a bit like walking into a networking room, you know, when you're nervous, thinking, will I like these people? Will they like me? Am I going to get murdered in the woods? Is, you know, am I going to make a fool of myself or fall over, or can I cope with the walking? And it was the best day. One of the first walks we did was a bosom circular walk for 12 miles. And there was a jazz festival and a boat show going on at Chichester Harbour. So we sat and had our lunch and listened to live music.
Wow.
It was just perfect. And I came back at the end of the day feeling amazing.
Mm.
Just amazing.
Right. So that, again, is like a really good example, right? And that's brilliant that you're doing that. And all of these things are available in the local area. And the event that we're going to today is with the Brighton Chamber. And I highly recommend taking advantage of the opportunities that come through there. But it is that feeling you're left with, whether it be a small event or a large event or like a workshop or a conference or a festival, whatever it may be, it's the feeling that is achieved at the end of it for the person attending, but also for the person or the people organising the event, which is the goal.
Yeah.
You and I, we are both experienced in putting on in-person events. And even though I haven't done an in-person event recently, I still look back at those events that I've done with great fondness and happiness. So I'd like to take a bit of time talking, before we move on to our guest for this month, I'd like to just take a little bit of time talking about that. Mm. So tell us, Lisa, about your experience with running in-person events.
Well, I think the one that springs to mind immediately, and I've spoken about this on the show before, is Inspiring Talks Brighton. Mm-hmm. I took over running Inspiring Talks Brighton from the lovely Sally Gorotso, gosh, 3 years ago, I think it was now. And I'd been as, in fact, that was where you and I first, well, where I first got to see you on stage. And that's how we sort of started our friendship and our relationship. And I used to go and watch as an audience member and then took over running Inspiring Talks Brighton. And it was just, people would say to me at the end of the event, things like, I've just had the best time ever. This is fantastic. I feel so great. I've learned so much. I've met amazing people. It was, and I remember taking my mum, actually. She came down once and I didn't think she'd really get it, because some of the speakers, the stories were interesting and quite out there. She loved it. She absolutely loved it. And she came every month then after that, because she said, for somebody in her 70s, she said, it's just incredible. I can't explain what it was, but people got a lot out of it. And as a host, as the curator of that event, I got so much from it, so much from it personally, professionally. It was just amazing.
That's awesome. And if you think about what actually made it work, because if we think about what makes a successful event, a successful in-person event, for anyone listening who's thinking of doing the same, what do you think the ingredients were for you there?
Well, I think there's two elements. From a practical point of view, it needs to be easy. So people need to know how to book. They need to know what time it starts, how to get there, is there parking? All of that practical stuff, you need to make it easy for people to go. I know that might sound simple, but when you're organising event, all of those things take a lot of time and organisation behind the scenes. But if you get that right, you're a long way to getting people to come along. So I think there's a practical side of things. I think venue plays a big part, depending on what it is you're running. Now, Inspiring Talks Brighton used to run at, oh gosh, I can't remember the name of the pub now, the Nightingale Rooms right by Brighton Station.
Yes.
And it had a really great vibe. The room was cool and funky. The seating was great. It was just, it had that sort of energy to it that was inspiring. Mm. I think venue definitely plays a part. Yeah. And then, especially with inspiring talks, you needed to have the right ingredients of speakers. So we were very clear that it wasn't a sales pitch. A lot of people came to talk about their businesses or their books they'd written, but a lot of people also came to share their life story. Mm-hmm. There needed to be a hook that would hook the audience in. Mm. You didn't need professional speakers. You didn't necessarily need people that had done it before and been on stage before, because part of it was the fact that if you had somebody on stage and it was their very first time being on stage, the audience could feel that and were, you know, wanting them to do so well. So you didn't have to be a perfect speaker. You just needed to have that passion and inspire people.
There's some really good points that you've made there, and I think what I could add to that is all of that. And so I'm just thinking back to the first conference that I put on. Mm. Oh, it's like a two-day event. You were there, and it was, when I thought about what I wanted to achieve, it definitely was a feeling. Mm. I think also something to consider is the audience, right?
Yeah.
Is the type of people that you want to come, the demographic of people that you want to come who are going to get the most out of the event. And for us, it's kind of, well, for inspiring talks, it was kind of all sorts, really, wasn't it? It was anybody who wanted to be inspired or feel inspired. So that might be people who were employed or run their own business, just people that wanted to have a moment to experience something, to be moved. I had quite a clear outcome with my entrepreneurial leaders event, in that I wanted them to learn something, but then I also wanted them to be inspired and motivated. And it was the energy that I really wanted to focus on. Yeah. And I think with a larger event, and it depends on what type of event, and I know we're going to be talking about a specific event later on, which is Pub in the Park, which is quite different from what I'm talking about here. But I wanted to create an energy before the event. Mm. And so with all those logistics, so important, you're so right, I have to be very clear on where it is, what the timetables are, who the speakers are going to be, when breaks were going to happen, what was involved with breaks, was food provided or not, and all of that.
Yeah.
And then creating this energy around getting people focused on what they wanted to get out of it. And the way that I did that was by creating the Facebook group.
Yes.
I know that you have the Facebook group for yours as well, but I guess it was yours was like an ongoing thing, whereas this was like one event. So I wanted to really get people connecting with each other before the event, so that by the time they all met, they already felt like, and this is where the beauty of the blend of online and in-person works really well, right? Mm. So that, you know, you're putting questions in the group to get people to introduce themselves. I was asking people to go live so people could actually see themselves on video. The speakers were also added to that group as well, so they could introduce themselves and that people could connect with the speakers before the event, so that they felt like they were building relationships, because these sorts of things are networking opportunities as well. If it's a business focused type of event, it's a networking opportunity, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when I've attended events, I used to go to the Youpreneur conference, which is run by Chris Ducker. He's not doing them anymore. But he did a similar type of thing, and it was a three-day conference, and we were all put into a Facebook group, and the speakers were put in. And I'd have a look and connect with people and send messages to the speakers and send messages to people to connect with them and ask to meet up with them at the event, which I did. And that proved very fruitful, actually, because I ended up signing quite a few clients from doing that. That wasn't the sole aim. But I think having that pre-event, so people can get connected, warm up to each other, and think about their goals and think about what they want to get out of it.
Yes.
And then post as well, post events, doing a similar thing so people can consolidate their learning, they can tie up their connections, they can carry on having conversations. And that was something that was really, really key for that particular conference. And I also think, as you say, the venue was really important because people were traveling from all over. So access was actually really important. And where I chose was right on the seafront, and it was walking distance from a train station. And it was really near a car park, because that can be a huge barrier to people coming, right? Mm-hmm. How do they get there? It's really interesting. I went to see Michael Bublé last Thursday.
Oh, yes. A lot of people did, I think.
And this was an event that was, you know, 3 years ago. It was, well, 2 years ago, it was set to happen. Then, of course, it didn't. Then it got rescheduled. Then it got cancelled again. And so it finally happened. And he said something really interesting at the end, which he's not actually my normal cup of tea. I like his Christmas songs and stuff. I wouldn't have naturally chosen to go to see him. And that was the key thing he said. He asked people to raise their hand at the end that had never been to a concert of his before. And half the audience raised their hands. Now, that's very clever on his part, because he said, I could have done a show at the O2. But getting to the O2 for people who are traveling all over the country is a lot harder than doing a show in the hometowns of the people. Yeah. Not only is it easier for my fans to get to that, but also for people who wouldn't normally see me, they can then, it's a less of a barrier, and they have chosen to come.
Ooh.
So that, the location of the event is so important to be able to, because I don't know about you, but one of the challenges, which we can talk about, was selling tickets.
Radio Reverb. 97.2.
Radio Reverb. Let's talk about that selling ticket.
Selling tickets. Yeah, it was really funny, because my first ever Inspiring Talks Brighton was a huge success. And when I say a huge success, the venue took about 90 people, and I sold out. And I was like, yeah, I've got this. Absolutely, yeah, sorted. I'd got all my social media, and I felt great. Second month, I think by the Wednesday before the event, or the, you know, 3 or 4 days before the event, I'd sold 10 tickets. And I thought to myself, oh my God, it's a complete disaster. It's just going to be awful. I've got these 5 speakers with 10 people in the audience. Oh! And I remember feeling really, really depressed about it. And in the end, I think we ended up with about 20, 21 people. But what I decided was, I'm going to just change this slightly and do something differently. So I added in a Q&A. So every time somebody was on stage, when they finished, I invited the audience to ask questions. So it became a very intimate event. And it worked brilliantly, because everybody felt part of it. Whereas the one before was fabulous, but the audience were there to listen.
Yeah.
They weren't there to get involved. Yeah. When we added in the Q&A, it had a completely different vibe, a completely different energy. The audience felt part of it. And so I learned something different, but just by changing something. And also, I think it was that mindset of, you know, Inspiring Talks, the whole purpose was to inspire. And my view was, if I can inspire one person in that room to go away and maybe change something because of what they've learned, job done.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think we get too caught up on the numbers, and it's got to sell all the tickets. And sometimes it's okay not to. Mm. But the difficulty of selling tickets is a challenge.
Yeah. And do you know what? I love the way you flipped that and you changed that to work for you. I did that with a a similar thing when I was running a membership group. And I ended up switching that to a mastermind for less people. And that worked. When we're thinking about big events, so it must be really hard. Now, so with my event, I think, what was it, 100 and, I think it was 130 people max. And obviously I could employ strategies to help sell the tickets. And one strategy that lots of people know about is if you have a speaker coming to your event, the speaker is required to promote to their audience. Anybody that's involved in the event has a requirement to promote. And I know with big events and festivals and things like that, and we'll talk to Jake about this, we'll employ similar. And then now we have the whole influencer culture on social media where people of influence can promote things in order to sell tickets. Because if you're just using one method to sell tickets, especially, you know, an event like Pub in the Park, I will find out later, but gosh, I can imagine how many thousands of people are able to come to that event. And also, you know, the reasons that they want to come, you know, and all those sorts of things. But it's how you get the word out to a large amount of people about something. So you can't just rely on one tactic.
Oh, so you know, you could sit here and go, I'm going to promote it all on Facebook. Great. But what about all those people that don't use Facebook that still read the paper? And so it is thinking about all those different methods of promotion. We're obviously talking on a radio show right now.
Yeah.
We're talking about events. So, you know, being able to talk on the radio is a great way of promoting event. Getting on TV, doing, you know, looking at your PR and getting into magazines or local community newsletters and things like that.
Yeah.
Social media, blog posts.
Yeah.
Guest speakers or in groups, or there's lots of different ways.
And the good old flyer.
Oh yeah, they still work.
They do. And for me, actually, I think of a few events that I didn't know about that I am going to because someone thrust a flyer in my face, or if I was at a place of interest, wherever it might be, and I see a flyer that grabs my eye, it still is very powerful. Now, I know that we're trying to move away from using paper and things like that, but it's about meeting people where they're at, where their footfall is, where their eyes are going to gaze and thinking about the audience and who's actually going to come.
Yes. And interestingly, going back to talking about Toastmasters meeting last night, last Friday, we, as our group, did a window display in the Tourist Information Centre about Toastmasters. Funnily enough, we got 5 visitors last night because they'd walked up the high street and looked in the window and went, oh, that's interesting. So even something as simple as that can, you know, seeing a poster in a shop window or in the post office can, you, it's sowing that seed and then that seed being seen perhaps in many different places.
Yeah. And I think it's also the WIFM, the what's in it for me. And a lot of the time, well, I have to talk to people about that sort of thing all the time because I help them to communicate messages, some difficult messages, or, you know, try and get people to take action from delivering a particular message. Yeah. But with an event, it is also, unless it's like your favorite pop star. And like an event, which again, we'll talk about soon, about with Pub in the Park, is there will be bands there, bands that people like, and there will be famous chefs there that are cooking food. But unless, what else is there apart from that particular draw? What is that person, that audience member going to get out of the experience? Is it connection? Is it business opportunities? Is it just a blimmin' good time and some fun?
Yeah. Is it a place where you, you know, get together with a group of your mates that you haven't seen for a while and you reconnect with them and you, yeah.
Yeah. Well, all of these, I mean, obviously we are only speaking from our experience. So I think it's probably time now to move to our guest for this month, Jake. and hear what he has to say. So you're listening to 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Business Show with myself, Helen Packham, and Lisa Moore.
Radio Reverb.
Listening to the Radio Reverb Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM, available to listen to on our player on DAB and available as a podcast too. And as we know, this month we are talking all about events. And I'm going to be speaking very, very shortly to the creative director of brand events, Jake Leonard. But before I do that, I just want to mention something. I've got an event coming up that I really want to let you know about. If you recall, I think it was, last year we had the people on from Care for Veterans. This is an amazing charity that's based in Worthing. And they are putting on a fair on Saturday, the 20th of August, from 12 o'clock till 4 p.m. And that's at the Residence for Care for Veterans, Gifford House, Boundary Road in Worthing. Now, this sounds amazing, what's going on at this fair. There's 20 local artisans. There's going to be a performance by the British Legion from Lancing, Brass Band, and also the Worthing veterans are going to be marching. There's vintage car displays. There's lots of games and raffles. There's plate smashing, a burger kitchen. And all of the entry donations will go towards the care and rehabilitation of disabled veterans for Care for Veterans. It's an amazing cause. So if you can get along there, please do. It's on Saturday, the 20th of August, and not to be missed. Now, Lisa and I have already spoken about our own experience of putting on events and live events and my conferences and Lisa's inspiring talks events and our experiences and the challenges that we faced with that. But I'm now going to be talking to an expert in this field. His name is Jake Leonard, and he is the creative director for Brand Events. Welcome to the Brighton Business Show, Jake.
Hi, hello. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Now, Jake, as I say, I've been talking about my humble experience of putting on an event for 150 people. And for me, I found that quite challenging. But you deal with events on a whole different level, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, as a company, I mean, we've been around for over 20 years, so well before I joined, but we've done things for, a couple of thousand people all the way up to 100,000 people. We've done things in stadiums around the world. We've done things in kind of festival fields around the UK, and have really catered to all sorts of sizes, really.
That's incredible. And well, we'll come on to what it's like running these types of events and what really goes into it, but I'd love to hear about you. What led you on this path?
Way back when I was at university, I was up in Birmingham studying, and I was finding that I was spending most of my time outside of university going to events, going to festivals. Ever since I was young, I was going to Reading and Leeds. I was going to festivals abroad in Belgium, all sorts of different places, going to Glastonbury, obviously. And I was studying psychology, and I've always been fascinated by human emotion and what drives people to go and do things and have shared experiences. And so I think it kind of naturally tied in for me. And I kind of decided towards the end of my time in Birmingham that what I really wanted to do was see if I could make a living out of it rather than just go and enjoy it every summer. Let's see what it actually involves. And, boy, was I in for a shock realizing, everything involved in making events of this scale rather than just being a punter.
I love that, because it's kind of like following a passion, isn't it? I totally wholeheartedly agree with you in terms of those live experiences. I've never been to Glastonbury. Oh, my God.
You have to, especially now it's back.
I know. I watched pretty much every minute of it on the television. So, see, there's loads of different parts that go into making these types of events happen. We'll find out a bit more about what they are in a minute, but what is your role as creative director, and what does that actually entail?
So for me, creative director specifically sits at the moment over our Pub in the Park tour. So we have two big shows at the moment. One is Carfest, which is an incredible charity festival that's fronted by Chris Evans, the Virgin Radio DJ. And the whole purpose of that show is to raise as much money for charity as possible. So it's a fantastic weekend of kind of cars racing around tracks, huge, incredible performances from big musicians from all around the world, and all sorts of incredible things for the family. But what I work on specifically at the moment is Pub in the Park, which is a traveling food and music event. So we tour all around the UK. We started in 2017 with a show in Marlow in Buckinghamshire, and that's now grown to 9 shows across the summer. So we are midway through our tour at the moment. We did 6 across May to July, and then we've got 3 coming up in September. So my responsibility on that tour is overall brand development and how we're growing that from 1 show to 9, along with kind of control and strategy in terms of the comms, how we promote our shows to our audiences, how we reach those different pockets of communities that we visit, those different regions, as well as having a hand in the content strategy. So what acts are we booking? What chefs are we booking? Who are we getting to do demos to make sure that we're getting the right content there to maximize the different locations we visit?
Wow, that's so cool to be, because that's quite diverse. It's quite a lot. There's quite a lot of responsibilities there, and they're quite different. I think the choosing of the being part of actually who's going to be performing and what that's actually going to look like. How do you find that? Is that something that because of your knowledge and understanding of a demographic audience, you think, okay, well, I know these acts and I think they'd be brilliant? Or how does it work?
Well, there's a few different elements. I mean, I'd love to say there's an exact science, but I think that most people in our industry would attest to that. I think there is an element of gut feeling in it. There's an element of knowing, using historical data, what works in locations. So there are some things in terms of the content we book for different shows that we know will be surefire, either because we've seen it work well before or we've seen it work with other competitor events. There's obviously always, when it comes to booking music and booking chefs of a certain level, there's barring clauses and there's a lot of research that goes into making sure that you're booking people that aren't gigging nearby anytime soon, so you don't kind of saturate your market. But then there's also, you know, it's getting into what town's like. I mean, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you from Brighton as well, from Hove, and there is a huge music scene here, but also a huge foodie scene. And the pub and the park demographic usually skews from about 35 up to 55 years old, about 60% female, 40% male. But what we find down here in Brighton, and it's going to be the first time we run it here in September, which is really exciting, you know, that 20-year age range is skewing slightly towards the younger end. And what that means is we've tried to strike a balance of kind of heritage acts that will suit the older generations in our demographic, like the Human League and Gabrielle, but then also trying to keep something, you know, slightly fresher, like Basement Jacks, to provide that mix. So it's all about kind of assessing who your audience is and trying to, you know, dial it towards that as much as possible.
Really interesting that you mention about Brighton, right? Because obviously this is where we are. This is the Brighton Business Show, and this goes out to the people of Brighton and beyond. And the events that I have put on have been in Brighton. And most of the events I go to in Brighton, I've just spent a weekend out in Brighton for Pride, and it was absolutely teeming. And I went to some incredible music events. I didn't actually go to the park, but I went to I went to some, like, a secret party that had been put on. We didn't know the location until like an hour before, and
wow,
that was an incredible music event. And the culture within Brighton and the people of Brighton, as you say, I think it's quite unique because of the love of music and the free spirits that we have here. And it's interesting that you say that the demographic is skewed slightly younger, actually. And I can imagine that. And so, yeah, those music choices are really important to attract that type of people, but also the food is a big part of that. For this particular event, the food is a massive part of the draw. I'm a massive fan of Tom Kerridge. I always have been, you know, ever since he won the banquet on the Great British Menu. And I've always wanted to go to his pub, but he as a, you know, as a chef, as a personality, is definitely someone that people want to see. Let's talk about the food, because I've been to food festivals before, and there have been quite a few food festivals. But just tell us a bit about that in terms of what goes into that, what goes into the planning of that, and the thoughts process behind it.
You just hit the nail on the head, really. I mean, Pub in the Park is a food and music festival. And while the music is a huge draw, what we really seek to provide is a premium food offering. And that experience is on two levels. You've got actual pop-up pubs and restaurants where you can go and try taster dishes from incredible chefs, some Michelin starred, some kind of rising stars, AA Rosettes, kind of Australia, you know, top 50 guide. We get a really fantastic lineup together. But then you've also got kind of live cooking experiences. So we have a demo stage and we have a fire pit, which is a new thing for us this year, which is a very kind of rustic outdoor cooking demo area, which has kind of all these amazing kind of Kodai fire bowls and, you know, like a huge Gosney pizza oven, which is, you know, bigger than my kitchen, you know, incredible, incredible stuff going on. But what we try and do on both levels there, again, going back to the content strategy, is we try and bring regional towns the opportunity to try things and to experience chefs that they wouldn't normally be able to go further afield to try necessarily. So, you know, Tom has two of his incredible restaurants in Marlow, where we started. But, you know, if you're in Brighton, you're not necessarily driving over there for a meal anytime soon. So it's nice to bring people that stuff from further afield. But then we also, everywhere we go, sprinkle in a selection of the local. So we've just announced kind of a whole second wave of chefs for Brighton. And within that, we've got Jamie Horsall, who's the exec chef at Sin Sin. We've got Peter White from Riddle and Thin. We've got Pete Dantonis from Burnt Orange. So we've got some really awesome local names in there that aren't all necessarily serving dishes, but are there kind of doing demos and showing their experience. And, you know, the opportunity for people to get up close with that, with, you know, the chefs behind some of the most popular restaurants in the area.
Pretty unique. That's really cool. I love that. I imagine as a traveling event, it's really important to be doing that and getting a flavour of what's happening locally, what's happening with food locally. So can I just understand a little bit more about these food demonstrations? Because I'm just having a flashback, right, to when I was a child, and I think it was like BBC Good Food Live or something. I don't know.
Right.
And I remember sitting and watching some chefs doing cooking, and then we could all go up at the end and have a little taste of what they'd made.
Yeah. So we do that. So like I said, we've got the two different stages, and one of them, our kind of main chef demo stage, which is hosted by Mila this year, is kind of a sit-down affair, quite a big, almost like amphitheater kind of setup. You know, every demo will involve cooking, where you've got big screens so people can see quite up close of what the action is, commentary with the chefs about what they're doing, almost like Saturday Kitchen, that kind of environment. But then everything follows with a Q&A, and people do get really granular with it. There are people that will sit right at the front, and, you know, we've got an incredible Indian chef who's also got his restaurants in Marlow called Atul Kocha. He cooks incredible food. Like, if there's one thing you've got to come and try, you've got to come and try his curry. But when he does his demos, with curry being such a specific thing, and everyone's got really kind of minute differences in how they do their recipes, there are people that will sit right at the front. They will wait until the moment the microphone's ready, and they'll ask really detailed questions about, you know, seasoning and all sorts of stuff. And it's really nice to see, because you get people asking questions that maybe wouldn't really be answered by a cookbook, and that really needs, you know, an experienced chef to think about it and respond. Which I think, if that's the kind of thing you're in for, then it's a really incredible opportunity.
It's not just entertaining and delicious and fulfilling and connecting up with other people. It's actually educating as well. If you're someone who has any interest in food, and I am no chef, I am pretty rubbish at cooking, but I do like to, when I'm inspired, get a recipe book out, put some ingredients together and see if I can, you know, make it taste decent. So I'd be really super interested in that, especially Atul, actually. He was on the Great British Menu as well, wasn't he?
He has been.
He's an incredible chef. I think people listening also would love to know about Tom's involvement in the event and what he'll be doing.
When we first started in Marlow in 2017, it was our CEO and him, who have been friends for many years, that decided to put it on. And kind of the background for our company is that we set up Taste. So we set up Taste of London, and then we took it to several different places, and then eventually sold that show on. And Taste is still running today. It's an incredible event. But the key thing that we offer that separates us from them is the fact that people come to our show and they eat incredible food, and they try some lovely drinks, and they shop for some amazing kind of local trader produce. But then what they really want is a party. And they want to be able to have some fun after that. So we obviously put the music lineup on as a kind of remedy to that. And so you come along, and it's almost soundtracking, you know, your eating experience. It's not just coming along and grazing on dishes and then leaving. It's, you know, it's more experiential than that. But Tom is involved from the ground up. He's involved alongside us in terms of the locations we visit. He's involved in kind of the chefs we get involved, you know, to a certain extent, the music. And then when he's actually at the show, there are several opportunities to meet him. So Tom will be in the Brighton show. He'll be there all weekend. And so we kind of have hosts of the show. So Tom will be hosting all 3 days. On the Friday, alongside him, will be Simon Rimmer, who's a very good friend of his. And on the Saturday afternoon, it will be Marco Pierre White, which is extremely exciting. We're very, very happy to have him back. But what that will involve for Tom and the other hosts is they will typically open the show. So if you're an early bird and you're there ready when the gates open, you'll get a little bit of conversation from them at the start to open the event. They will all do a demo or a Q&A of some sort. They will often do book signings. So Tom has a new book out this September Which I would love to remember the name of, forgive me, you'll have to come and find it at the show. He'll be signing books as well. So there's lots of opportunities for you to come and see him and meet him. And he's a lovely, lovely chap that's got a lot of time for everyone.
It's actually really good to hear this, because I think for some people it's quite hard to sort of picture or understand what actually goes on. And the way that you've just described it there, I really love. It's like, yes, there's amazing food, and yes, you can buy amazing food, you can eat amazing food, you can hear from like top chefs in their field about cooking food, and then you can eat the food and really enjoy yourself listening to some awesome music as well. It's kind of like a festival vibe. It's like a more of a like a festival feeling, I'd imagine.
Oh, it fully is. I mean, we are a festival. There are tons of fantastic food markets and food shows around the UK that don't have the caliber of chef and music that we offer at Pub in the Park, that are fantastic to go to. Some of them are, you know, free entry around the country. But if you want to come and have a real premium experience that is not just getting up close with some of the best chefs in the world and, you know, award-winning musicians, but also, you know, have a lovely day out. And it's a day out for, you know, we talked about the demographic at the beginning, but, you know, our Saturday afternoon and our Sunday sessions are perfect for families. We lay on loads of kids' entertainment. But, you know, when it's a nice sunny weekend, which fingers crossed it will be, it is a festival, but it's a very accessible one. It's one that you can come to with your mum or your brother or your mates.
Radio Reverb.
97.2.
Radio Reverb.
Let's talk a bit about what it's actually like to run these types of events. The kind of the life cycle, really, of this type of thing. Because I know there's some misconceptions about what goes into this type of event and how it happens. But from the inside, what's it like? And what kind of, explain to us like what this life cycle of a weekend event is.
Every event is different, and every event has a different life cycle. But I would say, you know, when we were first talking about having this conversation about the events that we run, I was saying to you that I think it's a common thing amongst peers who don't work in the event industry that they would kind of assume that something of this scale is kind of put on in a few weeks, and then it goes up for the weekend and it's down in a week and that's it. But in reality, there is almost a year's worth of prep that goes into this. So with Pub in the Park being 9 shows, we are, you know, we're in midsummer, mid-tour right now, but we're already scouting for locations for next year, working out how and when to put our tickets on sale for 2023, which will probably be at the end of this year. So everything's kind of, we're always thinking 6 months in advance. And so with every show that we're doing, occupying a weekend, that being 9 weekends in total, we're on the road from May to September. And then everything from October through to April is preparation, it's ticket sales, it's doing deals with sponsors, it's booking in traders and starting to book in all the infrastructure. Because, you know, what's fantastic about this summer is after 1 or for some people 2 years of postponing shows, everything is back now.
Yeah.
And it's so heartwarming to see how many events there are out there this summer, especially festivals. But what that also means is preparation in terms of making sure that you've got all the toilets, all the fence lines, all everything like that needs to happen that little bit sooner, because right, obviously everything's back now. There's less to go around, etc. So you're always kind of thinking at least 6 months ahead.
I watched Trainwreck Woodstock 99. The other day.
Is that the Netflix documentary?
Yes.
I've heard about this. I haven't seen it yet.
My goodness, that was the most epic infrastructure fail that there is. You know, just thinking about the size, there was 250,000 people there. They were not equipped for it at all.
No. And they're not the only one. I mean, there's you know, history has shown time and time again that I wouldn't say it's easy to promote a festival. I think that marketing events comes with its own challenges and its own life cycle. But what I would say is marketing something, selling a dream is quite straightforward, but actually fulfilling on it is a whole different ball game. And, you know, it makes me think about, I don't know if you ever watched the Fyre Festival documentary.
Yeah.
So that's a very similar scenario in my head. And I remember watching that, I think with some colleagues, and some of my colleagues in operations kind of got shivers these guys are fantastic at selling this dream, this ultra luxury experience on an island, but without having any experience or knowledge or manpower behind how to actually build that on the ground. And I think there's a bit in the documentary that always sticks out in my head, gives me the chills, where they're on a yacht and it's about 15 days before about 10,000 people come to the island and they haven't put anything up yet. And they're looking at what they call a site plan, which is like scribbled on a piece of paper in felt tip pen. And they're sort of trying to figure out where to put things. And then one of them knocks a Corona beer on it and spills it. And so they break, they have a recess because they think, oh, we'll just do it later. And to think that you're 15 days out from a show with that many people and nothing's happened is quite terrifying, really.
The customer experience of something, of an event on the scale, such as Pub in the Park, has to be so right. If you think about that in terms of safety, being able to go to the toilet and being able to access water, for example, if it's a really hot day and all of those things.
But it's also like it's incredibly important to make shows accessible for people with certain requirements and provisions. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of kind of standards that festivals can achieve in this country, and some are better than others. And there are certain legal requirements, but then a lot of events seek to go above and beyond that. And so we offer kind of carer tickets and we offer accessible viewing areas and all sorts of these things, because it's really crucial to make sure that anyone that wants to can attend your event.
Yeah, I guess it's about, you know, planning in for anything that could go wrong and a contingency planning and things like that, I'd imagine. Do you have like loads of project managers with huge Gantt charts?
Well, I'd love to say we have more. We work with a fantastic health and safety company that we've worked with for years and years on many of our shows. So it's to a certain degree, the more complex elements of that are outsourced. But if you imagine it's a company that has worked side by side with us for at least 10 years, they're very much part of the team and they'll be there for all of the days in the run up to the show and at the show and model everything in the months beforehand. So it very much just feels like an additional part of,
right.
Of our gang.
One thing that I do have to ask, which when some people that listen to this show found out that I was going to be talking about these types of things, something that's come up and I have experienced is I've been to quite a lot of music events and festivals in the last month in the Brighton area. And once you get in, it's extortionate. As in the drinks are really, you know, highly priced and things like that. Now, I know that that's kind of different because maybe it's just a music event. And so, you know, the drinks at the bar are going to be higher priced. What are your thoughts on that in terms of, you know, it being these events that you've got, once you're in, there's no option but to drink and eat the food. Now, yours is a food-based event.
Mm.
So how does that work?
Well, I think that we spend a lot of time working on our pricing strategies and we review them every year. And I think that we price our tickets accordingly to the talent and the people that you can come and see perform and meet and experience. And then we are very careful and clear on our pricing of how much food costs when you're on the inside. Now, we provide an experience that doesn't, it not only is different from other shows because a session at Pub in the Park is about a 5-hour block. So you're not coming to Pub in the Park for a whole day or weekend. Yeah. Buy a weekend ticket if you want to, but typically you would come for a session, which means that you're not there from, you know, midday till 11 p.m. and suddenly you're spending loads and loads and loads of money on stuff. But what I'd say is everything is price relative to the quality, and you can come into Pub in the Park, and if you know everyone's feeling the pinch at the moment, if you don't have as much disposable income to spend on trying things and buying drinks and stuff like that, then there is a whole host of stuff that your ticket gets you access to just by virtue of coming in the gate. You know, you get to see all the demos, all the music, get up close and personal with the chefs. If you've got kids with you, there's tons of free kids entertainment. So I would say the Pub in the Park caters to everyone's needs. If you want to go there and have a crazy day trying every dish and trying cocktails at every bar, then you can totally do that. But if you don't want to do that, you're not going to get inside and be stuck for things to do. You're still going to have lots of stuff to fill your time.
That's really great. And I think, you know, that's about choice, isn't it? It's about giving people choice, and that you could go to Pub in the Park and not eat anything, you know, if you didn't.
And you could still leave with some incredible guidance from leading chefs and having seen, you know, Mel C or Gabrielle or someone like that.
Yes, so Mel C's, when's Mel C on?
She's on the Saturday afternoon. And she's absolutely incredible. She's a Pub in the Park favourite. We've had her several times this summer. Obviously, she was hugely popular at Glasto this summer. And, you know, she is, you know, she's the one Spice Girl doing it at the moment. You know, you've got to go and see it just to experience some of those songs again.
Well, I'll be coming on the Saturday. So I'm really, really, really looking forward to that. Really looking forward to it. So, Jake, before we finish off today, I think we've been talking about this event that's happening, but let's talk about the details. So for anybody listening that's thinking, wow, that sounds incredible, I want to come for the whole weekend, or I just want to come for one day, tell us, when is it happening? Where is it happening? Give us a bit more of an idea of who's going to be there, like in terms of singers, on what days, and how people can get tickets.
Yeah, sure. So Pub in the Park is coming to Brighton from the 16th to the 18th of September. So that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's going to be in Preston Park. In terms of the music, the headliners that you've got on the Friday night, you've got the Human League. On the Saturday afternoon, you've got Mel C. Saturday evening, you have Basement Jacks. And Sunday, you have Gabrielle. Now, that is alongside the kind of leading chef host that I mentioned. So Tom Kerridge will be there all weekend. You'll also have Simon Rimmer on the Friday. And you'll have Marco Pierre White on the Saturday afternoon, which I think is the hot ticket at the moment. That's the one not to miss. He's an absolute icon. And then across the weekend, you've got demos, like I mentioned, and other music and all sorts of bits and bobs happening. The best place to find all of that information is on our website. So if you go to pubintheparkuk.com, and then you can click on the Brighton pages from there, you can see our full timetable, all the information about the timings, the pricings of sessions, as well as kind of information on how to plan your visit, how to travel there if you're coming from further afield. So that's pubintheparkuk.com.
Pubintheparkuk.com. So as I say, I am going to be there. So any listeners that fancy coming, just give us a shout and it'll be lovely to meet up with you. I'm really making the most of connecting, as I said earlier in the show with Lisa, really connecting with people. The last 2 years, I think, as I was talking about this COVID lag, where we got used to being inside and we worked from home, we lived from home, everything was from home. And then we almost got conditioned that it had to stay that way. And a lot of people have experienced this. So you sort of isolate yourself when you don't need to anymore. And the light bulb switched on for me in about April time. And I was like, all right, I'm going to join the gym. I'm going to join a co-working space. I'm going to book loads of live events and I'm just going to connect with people. And I can't tell you how fulfilling it is to be around other human beings, experiencing amazing music, incredible food. As I say, the last weekend, just spending time with my friends out in Brighton was wonderful. And we need to do this more. So anybody that's listening and thinking, God, you know what? I haven't actually been anywhere recently. I've kind of got used to just staying at home. It's time to get out. And what better place to go than this fantastic event that's happening in September? Very locally, easily accessible, Preston Park. We all know that Preston Park's a fantastic place to hold events. It's a beautiful park in Brighton, and we all know how to get there. So get yourself some tickets, whatever days you want to go, get yourself some tickets. And if you do, give us a shout and let me know, because it'd be fab to meet up. Thank you so much, Jake, for coming on the Brighton Business Show. It's really great to hear your insights into how, just what goes into something like this. So thank you so much.
Oh, a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So you have been listening to the Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM, available on our site player, on DAB, and to listen to as a podcast. As always, we will be back next month with another guest focusing on a topic that you are going to find useful and interesting. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb.